stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Michael Brown reporting. Syrian Democratic Forces have seized full control of the Islamic State stronghold of Manbij near the Turkish border. The SDF said its forces were sweeping the city to make sure all the Islamic State militants had fled. The U.S.-backed forces had also freed more than 2,000 civilian hostages whom ISIS had been using as human shields. U.S. and coalition officials have long seen Manbij as a key hub for the Islamic State militants. The foreign ministers of Turkey and Iran have pledged greater cooperation on resolving the Syria crisis despite their differences on the issue. A chief international advisor to Turkey's president says despite differences with Tehran, Turkey is taking a pragmatic approach.
We don't have serious problems between Iran and Turkey. We have various cooperative areas in the region. We only have different foreign policy approaches in the region. That's why from time to time we stand in the different sides. But these are not serious problems will affect Turkish-Iranian relations.
During the foreign ministers' meeting in Ankara, they also agreed to deepen economic cooperation, particularly in the field of energy. A hacker who has taken credit for two breaches of U.S. Democratic Party organizations released personal information of nearly 200 lawmakers Friday. The release of personal contact information seems relatively harmless, but lawmakers are concerned that this hack may mean their personal emails could be accessed. And the United Nations Security Council has authorized the deployment of an additional 4,000 troops to South Sudan. South Sudan's government has said it would accept the new troops, but has voiced opposition to the troops being under UN command. This is VOA News. U.S. President Barack Obama says America has become a global leader in the fight against climate change. What he described in his weekly address Saturday is one of the most urgent challenges of our time. Mr. Obama says the U.S. has been making strides to combat global climate change.
We've multiplied wind power threefold. We've multiplied solar power more than 30-fold. In parts of America, these clean power sources are finally cheaper than dirtier conventional power. And carbon pollution from our energy sector is at its lowest level in 25 years, even as we're continuing to grow our economy.
The president added that the agreement now in place among 200 nations to offset the impact of climate change is something to build upon in order to leave a better, cleaner, safer future for our children. Thai police are trying to track down those responsible for setting off small bombs at several popular tourist towns over the past 2 days, killing at least 4 people and wounding dozens more. Police believe a local group with a political agenda is behind the bombings. Some officials have blamed elements of Thailand's Muslim insurgency in the country's deep south, but no group has claimed responsibility. Pakistani officials say the crew members of a Pakistani helicopter that crash-landed in Afghanistan early this month have been released by their captors, and the crew has returned home safely. Authorities said early this month the crew was in the custody of the Taliban. On Saturday, Usain Bolt of Jamaica appears for his first heat in the 100-meter sprint as the 2-time defending champion. Bolt's father told reporters Saturday his son is determined to do well at the Rio Games.
He said it will be his last Olympic, and he wants to go out in a glory, and so you can expect great things from him.
Bolt intends to be in the 100-meter sprint final on Sunday. Turning to the pool, on Friday, superstar American swimmer Katie Ledecky broke the world record in the women's 800-meter freestyle event at the Games, while fellow American Michael Phelps was upset by a swimmer from Singapore in the men's 100-meter butterfly. And the southern U.S. state of Louisiana is under a state of emergency Saturday following torrential rains that have caused deadly flooding. So far, at least 2 people have died. Southern Mississippi and Alabama are also experiencing heavy downpours. A large portion of the region is under a flood watch warning through Sunday. The fast rising waters have pushed cars and at least one 18-wheeler truck off highways and prompted many people to evacuate their homes. Rescue crews are looking for stranded residents. For details on these stories and much more news, join us at voanews.com. I'm Michael Brown reporting in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
You will realize that we said 90% of the polling streams were able to open no later than 6:30, which is a very good thing for us. It means that we only had 10% where there were few shortcomings.
Zambian incumbent President Edgar Lungu is ahead in early election results as main opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema alleges fraud.
So first and foremost, you should expect an outgoing of our candidate, our flag bearer, His Excellency John Dramani Mahama, and of course his running mate, Vice President Makisi Ndika Arthur.
The Ghanaian ruling party launches the re-election campaign of President John Dramani Mahama.
What I know is that the decision, the resolution taken by the UN Security Council is in flagrant violation of the rights of a member of the UN body.
And a South Sudanese official says the UN Security Council resolution adopted on Friday undermines the country's sovereignty. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The Electoral Commission of Zambia continues to release certified results of the stiff presidential contest between incumbent President Edgar Lungu and main opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema from the opposition United Party for National Development, or UPND. For more on the latest update of the results of the elections, Richard Mulonga, an independent Zambian journalist, joins us live via telephone link from the capital, Lusaka. Hello, Richard.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Yes, Peter, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. And how are you doing?
I'm fine here in Lusaka. Yeah.
So, Richard, let me ask you, Hakainde Hichilema is alleging fraud. What were some of his reasons?
The UPN have just released a statement here in Lusaka that they have been commissioned. The president had met the security chief where it was declared that Edgar Lungu must be declared winner with a margin of about 52% to 54%, and that the UPND president must be arrested and locked up if there will be any disturbances, and that the gentleman who hacked into the server room at the National Results Reporting Center must be released immediately. And this must be facilitated by the Inspector General of Police. But again, the UPND are alleging that, the hacking of the results center is employed by the PF itself to rig the elections and manipulate figures. The UPND are claiming that they have done an efficient and collaborative voter tabulation system that is showing that their candidate has won the poll by 54%. So those are the reasons that they're contesting. And the additional to that is that the results are trickling in at a very slow pace because the Electoral Commission had promised that the results would be announced 48 hours after voting. They're alleging, for instance, in Lusaka that the coalition center is here, but we don't have results from polling stations that are in Lusaka. What is the holdup? We are suspecting that something is being done to the figures in favor of the ruling party.
Richard, has the Electoral Commission officials explained to Zambians the allegations of the hacking of their service and the alleged manipulation or massaging of figures because they were on the air a few hours ago?
The only update we got is the confirmation that this intruder was nabbed and is currently in police custody. We haven't received any details apart from that. They have also explained that the delay in announcing the election results is in the constituencies and the polling stations where the transportation of the ballots to the totaling centers has been delayed by long distances and the sometimes inadequate transport.
Didn't they factor all these in before they gave the assurances of the 48-hour window of announcing the certified results and declaring particularly who won the presidential election?
That was the anticipation of everyone, especially that this is not the first time we are holding an election. Remember, just 16 months ago, we had an election. In 2011, we had an election. In 2008, we had an election. And 2006, we had an election. So we thought that all these five elections that we have had in the past would have given us enough experience in order to plan, to budget, and to anticipate such occurrences so that we take care of them so that the election is easy and free.
What is the current situation, particularly in the capital, Lusaka, following reports of delayed certification of the and releasing of the results and the alleged anxiety among supporters of the ruling party as well as the UPND, the main opposition party?
It's okay, generally calm. In fact, there is the anxiety that has gripped people's hearts. People are anxiously waiting for results to know who the ultimate winner is. We expect the reaction maybe later, maybe 6 hours from now, when most of the results would have arrived and the margins and the, you know, separating the winners and losers come. That's when, yeah, we are going to see maybe some activities, reactions, and so on and so forth. But generally, in fact, I speak with calm people, are going about their lives in their homes. People are meeting in social media, I mean, in social places. It's peaceful.
Thank you.
There's just an unconfirmed report that police have gone to surround the house for the Electoral Commission of Zambia director Priscilla Isaac, because there were demands by the UPND that she steps down. It seems maybe the police have information that some people want to attack her, so they have gone to surround the house to just provide that kind of support.
We will follow it up as the time allows us to do. Thank you very much. Richard Mulonga is an independent Zambian journalist. He joined us live from the capital, Lusaka. Meanwhile, Ifeoma Mulewa is the project director of the Christian Church's Election Monitoring Group, or CCMG. She told me her organization deployed over 1,000 poll observers throughout Zambia as part of an effort to ascertain the transparency of the presidential election.
A lot of stakeholders complained about some of the issues, especially related to juggling of the media and balanced coverage. I think those are some of the outcries that we had, impartiality by the police, that they were not very professional in some of the things that they did. But one of the things that really comes out is that if you look at overall, it did not undermine the fact that Zambians turned out in numbers and did not take away anything from yesterday. Of course, it affected the electoral process, but I think we believe it wasn't that bad. And a lot of people turned out. A lot of people were able to express themselves through the ballot.
Looking at the election day itself, what were some of your observations of the electoral process and how Zambians are comporting themselves currently?
Okay, I think generally yesterday was a very peaceful day. Everybody focused on what they needed to do. All those that were, their main role was that of voting, turned out to vote. All those who had the responsibility of conducting the elections, like the electoral body, did that. We had a few challenges. You will realize that we said 90% of the polling streams were able to open no later than 6:30, which is a very good thing. For us, it means that we only had 10% where there were a few shortcomings, but we had very adverse or very strange and unique areas where they started at 16 hours. Of course, it is a very big challenge because it meant people were voting overnight. We also had a situation where the party agents for the political party, it is well known that in an election, the stakeholder that cries out the most are the political parties. So they had representation, they had witnesses in the polling station. And you realize that the FDD had 53%, which was an increase from the last elections, which had 37%. The PF had 91% from 89%. UPND had 93% from 96%. So the ranges are the same. So you could tell that they had a very high interest in whatever was happening on the electoral day. And they were allowed to place their monitors. And we realized that the Electoral Commission was actually calling to date that the political parties witnessed the process. So from our perspective as CCMG, that tells us that the process was quite transparent. We had very few cases where our monitors, even from civil society organizations, were hindered from monitoring. And I must say that we also have collected critical incidents in terms of what is it that happened. So far, we collected 131 critical incidents, but we were only able to confirm 52. But of these 52, the most tragic situation is when we heard that in one of the polling stations in the southern region of Zambia, cadres from the ruling party stormed a polling station and agitated people that were on the queue. Apparently, some of them were from UPND, and they started fighting. One of the injured persons, as they got to the hospital, passed on.
What is the cooperation between your poll observers and the political parties? Because accepting the result of the election is critical to the success of the electoral process. Because ahead of time, the UPND and some opposition political parties created a scene as if the elections were being rigged or going to be rigged.
Well, from our perspective, most of the positions that I'm giving you are feedback, because we deployed 1,404 monitors to the polling streams and to a polling station of 1,001 polling stations. The Christian Churches Monitoring Group is working on a parallel vote tabulation when it comes to issues of the results. So most of the information that I'm giving you is of the process. And we are at the stage where we are almost completing the counting and the results themselves. I think different positions are coming out. I've heard different political parties making different statements. I do not know their basis, unfortunately, but I can speak confidently tomorrow when we are able to see where our monitors are, how many of whichever political party agreed to the counting process and the final results of that particular polling station, and how many declined to sign. The mere fact of the political party signing shows that they are agreeing. The disagreeing to sign for us shows that they are not accepting the way the results or the counting process was handled. Unfortunately, the data I have now is very raw, and information is still coming in. Until we have the complete good picture, I can't be in a position to comment on that.
Ifeoma Mulewa is the project director of the Christian Churches Monitoring Group, or CCMG, in Zambia. She spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. In news from West Africa, the Ghanaian ruling party, the National Democratic Congress, or NDC, has officially launched President John Dramani Mahama's re-election bid. 4 months before the general election, Joyce Bawa Modgari, the spokesperson for the Mahama 2016 re-election campaign, told me the NDC is confident that Ghanaians will express their confidence in the president and re-elect him.
Well, first and foremost, you should expect an outgoing of our candidate, our flag bearer, His Excellency John Dramani Mahama, and of course his running mate, Vice President Akwesi Issa-Arthur. We will also be outdoing our 275 parliamentary candidates at the same ceremony. And of course, thirdly, we will be signaling to the general public and of course to our core party supporters that we are galvanizing for their support and of course kickstart the official electioneering campaign to see to the re-election of His Excellency Dramani Mahama as President of the Republic of Ghana. So on Saturday, we will be launching officially His Excellency's 2016 campaign.
A lot of accusations have been leveled against the president. The opposition sometimes have called him incompetent, among other accusations. How confident are you that Ghanaians will repose confidence in him by re-electing him as the president for his second full-year term?
His Excellency, the president, is actually one of the most qualified individuals that Ghana has ever produced. Indeed, one of the most qualified candidates to ever become president of this beautiful country of ours. His Excellency started his political career first and foremost as an assemblyman, subsequently as member of parliament of both the Ghanaian parliament and, of course, the Pan-African parliament. Thereafter, he became communication minister, vice president, and is presently president of the Republic of Ghana. His Excellency is poised for re-election. He believes that he has delivered on his mandate to the good people of this country. And I think that presently he is the best candidate we have going into the election 2016.
The president promised that he was going to fix what is termed in the local parlance as Dumso, or the poor or erratic power supply in Ghana. Some said he has failed to do that, which they said Ghanaians should not re-elect him as such. And they said this epitomizes his inability to manage effectively the Ghanaian economy to make it attractive and create jobs for the youth. What say you about these criticisms?
I believe that first and foremost, His Excellency the President has clearly demonstrated his commitment to resolving the myriad of problems that affect us as a people. I believe that you've actually mentioned one of them, which has been a challenge with power distribution. But I'll quickly want to add that we commiserate with the situation that first and foremost, all the efforts that His Excellency has made, one and first and foremost, have been to wean us partially off hydropower and, of course, to move us to a more thermal and dependable source of power. Let's also note that over the years, very little has been done short of what Akosombo dams and Bui dams have done for us in terms of hydropower. Ghana presently has about 80% access when it comes to power distribution. Indeed, we have had some challenges in terms of our power distribution, but I believe that more than any other leader of this country, His Excellency the President has clearly demonstrated a commitment to resolving the problem. And I believe that in his State of the Nation address, he clearly stated the point when he said that he was going to fix himself, not to find solutions or find little, you know, stopgap measures, but to fully fix themselves. And that's exactly what His Excellency is doing. When we talk about job creation, we all know that job creation presently is a worldwide thing. His Excellency has actually embarked on one of the key drivers of employment, which is to improve upon our infrastructure in terms of education, in terms of health, in terms of power, in terms of housing, and what have you.
Joyce Bawamudgari is the spokesperson for the John Mahama 2016 re-election campaign. She spoke with me from Cape Coast. The South Sudanese Information Minister says the government in Juba would soon meet to decide the way forward following a decision by the UN Security Council authorizing a 4,000-strong regional protection force for the capital, Juba. Michael Makwe says the Security Council's decision is a violation of the sovereignty of South Sudan. He told me that the decision also undermines the peace agreement signed last year to end the country's conflict.
What I know is that the resolution taken by the UN Security Council is in flagrant violation of the rights of a member of the UN body. It amounts to an intervention, and this is very clear in the terms, even though the pen holder tried to play with the words, but nevertheless, it is a clear case of intervention. And it is a clear case of disregard of sovereignty of a member state. That is even against the provisions of the UN Charter.
Will the government in Juba work with the UN, especially when you have raised concerns about a violation?
You don't say work with the UN. We are members of the UN. We don't work with the UN. That is one. Number two, the fact that a resolution is taken by UN does not necessarily mean that it must be as it is.
So what is the next step forward in this regard? Because some are saying that this is just a confirmation of what IGAD and regional leaders decided recently.
No, this is misleading. This is not a confirmation. It is a violation. It is a complete disregard of the resolution of the IGAD and the IGAD Plus summit, which was held on the 5th. It is a complete diversion, and it is a misleading report. It is a misleading decision to say that you are conforming with the decisions, because in the committee, in the IGAD Summit Plus, It did not provide for whatever figures. It did not provide for intention. It did not provide for taking over of Juba Airport. It did not provide for all this. These are misleading reports.
Will the government in Juba officially protest this resolution by the UN, since you said it's a flagrant violation of the sovereignty of South Sudan?
The government will sit and it will come up with the official position.
So where does this leave the implementation of the peace process?
In the first place, the resolution has even thrown away the agreement. The resolution is not in conformity with the provisions of the agreement. So there are a lot of issues to be discussed here. I'm not here to discuss them now until the government meets and decides.
When will this meeting occur?
It will occur. It will meet when it meets.
What is the status of the situation currently in Juba?
The situation in Juba is normal. Everything is normal. It is only those who send in these fictitious reports with the aim of interfering in the affairs of South Sudan that are rendering these reports. The life in Juba is normal. Everything is normal. There had never been any fighting anywhere here in Juba. But nevertheless, there are certain individuals with their own ultra objectives who keep on reporting that there is insecurity in Juba and that there is insecurity in the airport at a time when the planes are landing. The busiest international airport is Juba International Airport. Nevertheless, people are saying people are insecure. These are people who have their own ultra objectives.
Issues of a third force to help protect civilians and all that have been discussed. Does your government accept the coming in of a foreign force to help?
This is not a third force. This is an additional force to the current 13,000 UNMISS force. And we have been saying, how do you increase the number of the UNMISS force to 17,000 at a time when you have not even evaluated the 13,000? What have they done? And which is that which they are unable to do to justify increasing the numbers? What we wanted was a protection force with a specific mandate according to the communique, and that mandate was to be, and this protection force was not to be under UNMISS, but to be a separate entity with a separate command. Now it has been turned into a UNMISS body, and you call it a separate force. How will it be a separate force? Meanwhile, it is under one command.
Michael Makuez, the South Sudanese Information Minister, he spoke with me from the capital, Juba. Meanwhile, Zimbabweans staged a protest outside a Harare court to show their support for pro-democracy activist Linda Masarira, who was arrested a couple of weeks ago with several other people that are out of custody on bail. This following crippling protests in Zimbabwe over the deteriorating social and economic situation in the country. For VOA, reporter Patricia Mudadigwa has more from the Zimbabwean capital, Harare.
The Zimbabweans, drawn from various organizations who have been staging such protests at the Mbare Magistrate Courts, where Masarira and 14 other pro-democracy activists are facing charges of engaging in public violence, vowed to continue such action until she is released. The pro-democracy activists were arrested during the July 6th Zimbabwe shutdown campaign, organized by Tajamuka Sesijikile campaign and Pastor Ivan Mawarire of Hashtag This Flag. Following the activist's arrest, Masarira has been denied bail several times as the state claims that she has an outstanding warrant of arrest. The court has refused an application for Masarira to be transferred to Mutare Remand Prison for the cancellation of the warrant, a move that would enable her to apply for bail. Her attorney, Kudzai Kadzere, who is also representing 14 other pro-democracy activists, told the court that he is disappointed by the failure of the state to provide a transcript of the court's record of proceedings. Speaking after today's remand hearing of the activist's case, Kadzere told Studio 7 that without the transcript, they cannot approach the High Court to challenge the continued incarceration of Masarira.
My understanding is that up to today, it has not yet been transcribed. So that is what is just stopping us from approaching the High Court. But as soon as we have a transcript of the High Court, of the proceedings, the record of proceedings, then we are going to take the matter up at the High Court. But as for now, she has been remanded to 25 August.
Harare Magistrate Sten Mambanje, who is presiding over the activist court case, today ordered the state to provide the defense with all the needed papers. He set August the 25th as the trial date for the activists. At the same time, protesters said they were hoping that Masarira would be released today. Her closest friend, Mandoa Maneju, said the continued incarceration of Masarira is painful to all Zimbabweans, especially women human rights activists.
We are not happy too, because I think that they are going to release her, but they can't. Linda is a mother. I think that they are going to release her, but yet they are saying that they are not releasing her. She is under custody, and she needs medication. She is not feeling well, but they can't attend her.
Zimbabweans have of late been protesting against the deteriorating social and economic situation in the country, with some, including war veterans, blaming President Robert Mugabe for running down Zimbabwe. From Harare, this is Patricia Mudadigwa.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in the nation's capital. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. And right now it's time for music from our African collection. Enjoy what we have for you today.
You are carry gone, but now you are go carry go. Sissy, I'm carry go. No, you are the tech on, but now you are wanna know, no. Sissy, Ferrari, oh. Yeah.
Havana. You understand? DJ. Yeah, yeah.
Do you know my baby? Yeah? Her name is Panya. Back in Africa, lady, yo. Panya, I'm a Panya. This cat I'm a brain, yo. Beautiful lady, yo. That can Africa, lady, yo. I sing in the song for Panya. And I dance in the dance for Panya, oh. I would do anything for Panya. And I thank you the Lord for Panya.
Panya, what is my baby name? Panya, Panya, Panya. Panya, what is your baby name?
Panya,
Panya. I request for my baby girl.
Panya, Panya, Panya.
Panya, scatter the fluff for me.
Panya, Panya, Panya.
She's my fine baby, baby, oh. She's my African lady, lady, oh. Panya, sweet like a chocolate. Come around, she a heavyweight. She a dance, she a move. Immediate, baby, yeah, I am. Aya, what is my baby name?
Panya, Panya, Panya.
Aya, what is your baby name?
Panya, Panya,
Panya. I request for my baby girl.
Panya, Panya, Panya.
Panya, scatter the fluff for me.
Panya. Panya, nah. So much love I have for you.
And I thank you the Lord for Panya.
Brother, where you belong? I just my own, you didn't just your own. no go there. We park on a jealousy. We dey buck nose, we want to see. Girl, is anything that you wanna see? Complain, brother. No, they complain. As a super sharp correct driver, you free to overtake. As a super sharp correct rider, be free to overtake. Matter the gallop, reach our destiny, oh. And that's how we go, they go.
Every day, we go to jolly. Every day we go to jolly. We go to jolly. Yeah, yeah.
Every day I wake up. Every day I need see food to chop. Every day when I dey go to work, I beg the Lord, yeah. Every day is the same. Baba God no be my way to change. Oh yeah.
Day alive, one day be on the road. If you know be God to you, I know if you day alive for you, one day be on the road. Every day we go to jolly, every day we go to jolly, every day we go to jolly, we go to jolly, yeah. Every day we go to jolly, every day we go to jolly, every day we go to jolly, we go to jolly, yeah, yeah.
You don't know. Are you ready now? Let me go.
show them. Show them.
You gonna know. Are you ready now? Your shoulder.
Look up.
That was Music from the Continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sally, producer Odette Frazier, and engineer for today, Caseus Martin, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, do not stop children having fun. Otherwise, they will also stop your serious work. I'm your host, Peter Clotte in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Nicaraguan President Daniel Ortega is actively closing the country's democratic space in the run-up to the November presidential and legislative elections. Beyond silencing the political discourse and competition necessary for a vibrant democracy, such actions could have a stifling effect on Nicaragua's prosperity and international standing. The Nicaraguan Supreme Court, comprised of Ortega loyalists, stripped the opposition Independent Liberal Party from its long-recognized leader, Eduardo Montealegre. It took similar action on June 17th when it invalidated the leadership of the Citizen Action Party, another opposition party with the legal standing to present a presidential candidate. Then on July 28th, the Supreme Electoral Council removed 28 Independent Liberal Party National Assembly members from their popularly elected positions. The lawmakers decried the decision as a destruction of Nicaragua's already debilitated representative democracy by closing the last institutional space for the opposition. Other parties, like the Sandinista Renovation Movement, called the council's decision a new blow to completely liquidate political pluralism and to eliminate the opposition voices in parliament and public institutions that have played an important role in denouncing Ortega's abuses of power. Most recently, on August 2nd, the president named First Lady Rosario Murillo as his running mate in the November 2016 presidential elections. Murillo is viewed by many in Nicaraguan society as wielding substantial power, and speculation is that this has the potential of creating a family dynasty. President Ortega, who is running for a third consecutive term, says that he will not allow international election monitoring in November, despite polls showing that a vast majority of Nicaraguans believe that international observation would add credibility to the electoral process. Credible elections and political plurality are fundamental to any strong democracy, said U.S. State Department spokesperson John Kirby. Nicaraguan civil society, business leaders, and religious leaders continue to advocate for a strengthening of democratic institutions, a separation of powers, and a fair electoral process. The United States calls on the Nicaraguan government to respect the voices of its people and take the steps for fair and transparent elections that permit the full participation of all Nicaraguan citizens, including by allowing opposition parties to operate independently and by inviting the presence of international election observers. Without such steps, the credibility of the upcoming election will likely be questioned by many voices domestically and internationally.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.